Ahsoka looked down at the grave, her heart a stone in her chest. She thought about all the clone troopers she had ever served with. They had been so quick to accept her, even when she first became Anakin's Padawan. Sure, part of that was their genetic code, but that only went so far. They respected her. They listened to her. They taught her everything they knew. And when she made mistakes, when she got some of them killed, they forgave her. And they stood beside her again when it was time to return to battle. The Jedi were gone. But what happened to the clones was almost worse. Their identities, their free will, removed with a simple voice command and the activation of a chip. If she hadn't seen it for herself, she wouldn't have believed it was possible. She felt completely alone in the Force, except for the dark nothingness that stared back at her every time she tried to connect with Anakin or any of the others. More than anything, she wanted a ship to appear, for Anakin to track her down, or for one of the other Jedi to find her. She wanted to know where they were, if they were safe. But there was no way to do that without compromising her own position. All she could do was what she had decided to do. Go to ground. She should have been at the temple. She should have been with Anakin. She should have helped. Instead, she'd been on Mandalore. Almost entirely alone. Surrounded by clones and confusion and blaster fire. Maul had escaped, of course. She'd had the opportunity to kill him, but had chosen to save Rex instead. She didn't regret that, couldn't regret it. But the mischief, and worse, that Maul might wreak in a galaxy with no Jedi to protect it, gnawed at her. Now there was the grave. Everything about it was false, from the name listed on it to the name of the person who killed him. It looked very real, though, and you couldn't tell clones apart when they were dead, especially not if they were buried in another's set of armor. Ahsoka held her lightsabers, her last physical connection to the Jedi and to her service in the Clone Wars. It was so hard to give them up, even though she knew she had to. It was the only way to sell the con of the false burial, and it would buy her a modicum of safety, because whoever found them would assume she was dead too. But Anakin had given them to her. She'd walked away from the Jedi Temple with nothing but the clothes on her back and had struggled for a long time to find a new place in the galaxy. When she had found a mission, when she had reached out to her former master for help, he had reached back and given her the Jedi weapons to do the job. He'd accepted her return. And it felt like a failure to leave the lightsabers behind a second time. She turned them on and told herself it was their incandescent green glow in the dark night that made her eyes water. How many Jedi were buried with their lightsabers today? How many weren't buried at all, but left behind like so much garbage, their weapons taken as trophies? The younglings. Had they known what to do? Who could they ask once their teachers had been cut down? Surely there had been some mercy for... She knelt, extinguishing the energy, and planted the hilts of both her weapons in the freshly turned dirt. She stood quickly and resisted the urge to call the lightsabers back into her hands. They must be left there, memorializing the man they were recorded as having killed, a trophy for the incoming Imperials to find. And they were coming. Ahsoka could feel it in her bones. She had a ship. Unremarkable and well-built. Rex was already gone, his false death inscribed on the marker in front of her, and the false report of her death at his hands credited there as well. When they were digging the grave, they had agreed to separate and head for the Outer Rim. It was chaotic there, but it was the sort of chaos where a person could get lost. The chaos on the core worlds was motivated by Palpatine's new peace, and if Ahsoka tried to hide herself there, it would be only a matter of time until she was found. She placed a hand on the grave marker and allowed herself one more moment to think about the man who was buried there and about the man who wasn't. She thought about her master, whom she could no longer sense, and the other Jedi, whose absence was like an open airlock in her lungs. With determination, she shut it. She stopped looking for Anakin through the connection they shared. She stopped remembering the clones, alive and dead. She turned and walked to her ship. She wondered what she would say when she got to a new planet and someone asked her who she was. She knew her name was on a list of supposed criminals. She couldn't safely use it anymore. She couldn't say she was a Jedi. Not that she ever could have said that in good conscience anyway. She'd given up that right. Now she paid the price doubly for her abandonment. At least the pilot's seat made sense. She knew what to do when she was sitting in it. The ship hummed to life around her, and she focused on things she knew for certain. She was Ahsoka Tano. At least for a little bit longer. And it was time to go. Chapter 6. After that first night at Selda's, Ahsoka settled into the rhythms of life on Raeda without incident. Her acceptance by Kaden, and more important, by Selda, made everyone else treat her like she'd always lived there. The farmers brought her broken threshers and other pieces of equipment to fix, and the vendors and shopkeepers acted like she was one of their own. In the Core, Ahsoka had seen guilds and crime syndicates protect their members, but this was different. There was none of the fear or manipulation, except in the case of Tobola, whom nobody really liked. But even he paid on time and did his job. It was kind of nice, when it wasn't excruciatingly boring. "It's a family," said Miara. She had stopped by to install the lock on Ahsoka's door. "But we're not family," Ahsoka protested. Miara looked at her, an expression on her face that was almost hurt. Ahsoka had seen families before. She had saved families before. But it had been a while since she'd had one. It wasn't the Jedi way. She had been deeply loved on her home planet. But that was so long ago that all she could remember was the feeling of it, not the practical results.
"There's two kinds of family," Miara said after a moment. "There's the kind like me and Kaden, where you get born in the right place, to the right people, and you're stuck with one another. If you're lucky, it turns out okay. The other kind of family is the kind you find."
Ahsoka thought about how the clones, even ones who had never met, defaulted to calling each other brother. She had thought it was because of their genetics and military connection, but maybe it was something else.
"Kaden and me, we were alone," Miara continued. "But then Vartan hired Kaden. He didn't have to. He didn't have to pay her full wage either, but he did. All sorts of bad things could have happened to us when our parents died. But instead, we got a new family."
Ahsoka considered this.
"Now, I don't expect you to tell me who died," Miara went on. "But clearly someone did. Kaden said you were adopted, which means you lost family twice. So now, you get us."
The younger girl was so determined that Ahsoka couldn't bring herself to correct her. She wasn't looking for a family. But Master Yoda had taught her that sometimes you found things you weren't expecting, and it only made sense to use them when you did. The people on Raeda protected their own, with none of the violence or cruelty or cold-blooded calculation Ahsoka had seen at work in the Core. Maybe it was good to take advantage of it, even though thinking about using her new friends on those terms made her a little uncomfortable. She looked at Miara, who was installing the final part of the lock.
"Isn't that sort of, I don't know, unfair?" Ahsoka asked, with exaggerated care. They didn't even know her real name, after all. "I mean, I just show up, and you guys take me on?" "Well," Miara said, "it's not like you aren't useful to have around. Everyone's tech works better after you finish with it, and that keeps Hoban's head from getting too big."
Ahsoka laughed. She supposed that was true. In the distance, the horn sounded. Miara started to pack up her things.
"I've got to run," she said. "We're on the evening shift this week, so you're on your own for dinner for a bit. The lock's ready, though. You just need to set the key. Tap your finger here."
Ahsoka did as she was told, and the lock turned green.
"Excellent," said Miara. "I mean, it won't keep out anyone who is really determined, but you'll know someone broke in. And they'll get quite the shock when they do."
Miara's locks, it turned out, could be a little vindictive. "Thanks," Ahsoka said.
Miara finished packing up and went on her way, leaving Ahsoka alone with a new lock and a host of new thoughts to tumble around in her head. She looked at the vaporator she was supposed to fix that afternoon and decided that she had spent too much time indoors during the past week. The tedium of an agricultural community was starting to wear on her. Oh, the Jedi had their rituals and obscure traditions too, but Ahsoka was accustomed to those. Raeda had a new kind of boredom, and Ahsoka never did well when she was bored. It was time to check on her cave and see what else she might find in the area. She packed everything she would need for the day in the bag Neera had given her when Ahsoka fixed the calf maker in the house Neera shared with her brother. She put in a ration pack, even though she had fresh food too, and attached her water canteen to her hip, right beside where one of her lightsabers used to hang. She wrapped up all the metal pieces she'd collected since the last time she went out to the cave and put them in the bag as well, then hoisted it onto her shoulders. It was much more comfortable than her last bag. Neera had altered it so it wouldn't rub against her leku. As Ahsoka made her way out of town, she passed quite a few farmers on their way to the fields. Several of them greeted her with Ashla's name, and she waved back with a smile that wasn't forced at all. She walked past all the houses and the few little gardens that line the edge of town. Why farmers would want to garden in their spare time was beyond Ahsoka, but she had strange hobbies too, except that hers were secret. Whatever Miara might say, Ahsoka didn't think that families and secrets went well together, and she was much better practiced in the latter than she was in the former. Kaden had already begun to ask leading questions, hinting that she'd like to know more about where Ashla had come from and what she did when she disappeared from town. Ahsoka did her best to change the subject. The hard part was that Ahsoka found she actually wanted to talk to Kaden and tell her all sorts of things. They didn't have any life experiences in common, but Kaden was a good listener, even though neither of them could solve the other's problems. Moreover, talking to someone who was mostly untroubled by the largeness of the galaxy helped Ahsoka focus, and she was having trouble with that sort of thing these days, even when she tried to meditate. She was unbalanced, Ahsoka decided, pulled in too many directions by her new feelings and her old grief. What she needed was to recenter herself, and meditation was the best way to do that. She'd avoided those kind of exercises for a while now because she didn't like what she saw when she did them. But if she was going to regain control of her life, she was going to have to regain control of her meditations as well. She could use that focus to make sure she didn't wander into a vision or memory. And in her regular life, it would help her keep her thoughts in order, not to mention keep her tuned into the Force. She felt calmer, almost the moment she passed the last house, when the noise of feet and machinery was replaced by the whispering grass and the promise of solitude. A few clouds dotted the sky, and it was windy, but still mild enough for Ahsoka not to feel the weather bite at her. It was, she decided, a good day for a run. She tightened the straps on the pack Neera had made for her, and then threw back her head and took off. The wind whistled past her as she picked up speed, and she felt like if she could go fast enough, she might be able to fly clear off the moon's surface. She laughed, half in exhilaration and half at her own silliness. If she wanted to fly, she could just take her ship and fly. And anyway, she couldn't run as fast as she was capable because she couldn't use the Force in the open. Even without the Force, it took much less time than before for her to reach the hills, and she slowed to a walk so she wouldn't miss the signs that led her to her cave. Ahsoka retraced her steps, noticing more places where caves were cut into the stone. She wondered if any of them were connected. Hers wasn't, which was one of the reasons she liked it, but it might be useful to have more of a network, and those caves were more likely to have natural water sources that didn't rely on technology. Who exactly do you think is going to need these caves? She asked herself. She ignored her own question and ducked through the entrance to her hiding spot. Everything was exactly as she'd left it, from the stone slab concealing her small pieces of tech to the footprints on the floor. She added the new pieces to the collection, her hand hovering over them as if she could build something, and then replaced the cover. Then she went to the middle of the cave and sat on the floor, her legs tucked under her. She breathed in and out slowly, the way Master Plo had shown her all those years before when they had first met. She had been so confused back then, and more than a little scared. The slaver, who had intercepted her village's signal to the Jedi and come to take her, had been frightening. But the instant Ahsoka had laid eyes on Jedi Master Plo Koon, she had known she could trust him. Training with the Jedi as a youngling had fully restored her self-confidence, but at the same time, it made her reckless and brash. It wasn't until she became a Padawan to Anakin Skywalker and had to leave the temple again that she finally understood that the galaxy could be calm and tempestuous, safe and dangerous at the same time. The key, as always, was finding balance. She did her best to think about that balance right now. She focused on her breathing and the moon she sat on. She reached out through its grasses and felt the sun, encouraging her to grow. She found the little gardens, each plant given special attention to ensure good health, and understood the farmers who tended them a little better. And she spread out across the fields, feeling the order in straight plowed furrows and organized harvesting. The bare fields were being turned again for new seed as the growing season shifted. Soon, threshing would be done, and the crews would move to other work. Raeda's small wealth was on the ground, so Ahsoka didn't think to look up until the stones around her began to shake. If she hadn't been meditating, she wouldn't have noticed. But so deeply connected to the planet, she felt it more keenly than she felt her own body. There was something in the air. Ahsoka's consciousness raced back across the grasslands to where she was sitting and found the cave walls and floor trembling. It wasn't the dangerous sort of shake, only the warning kind, and Ahsoka was glad for the advanced knowledge. She stood slowly to work out the kinks in her neck and knees and stretched her hands above her head. Her fingers touched the roof of the cave, and she felt immediately grounded in her body and the physical awareness of her surroundings. Something was terribly wrong. She left the cave, and as much as she wanted to race to the hilltop, she made herself be cautious. Standing on top of her own hiding place would be rash, and she needed to be careful. She walked for several minutes, the shaking in her bones getting more and more pronounced, and then climbed to the top of another hill. As Ahsoka looked toward the settlement, her heart sank. Hovering over the houses, dwarfing them in every way, was an Imperial Star Destroyer. She could see smaller ships emerging from its hangars and making for the surface of the moon. She knew they carried troops and weapons and all kinds of other dangers. She thought she had gone far enough. She thought she had more time. But she was trapped, again, and she would need to figure out what to do next. The Empire had arrived. Chapter 7. Her first instinct was to run. She was a good fighter, but she also knew when she was overmatched. Raeda was remote. There was no need for an Imperial presence, especially one so heavy. Unless the Empire had a good reason. A living Jedi. However inaccurate that designation, would certainly give the Empire a cause. Even as she mentally calculated how long it would take to get to her ship, Ahsoka forced herself to slow down, to think, focus, before she reacted. The Empire had no reason to suspect she was on Raeda. Officially, Ahsoka Tano was dead, or at least presumed so. Even if someone had traced her to Thabesca, no one there had known her true name or her destination when she left. The modifications she'd made to the ship she'd stolen from the Fardis would have rendered it almost impossible to track. There was no need for her to act rashly. She'd left at the chance to leave Thabesca, and in doing so, had left something important undone. She didn't want to make the same mistake again. The walk back to town was long, and Ahsoka felt exposed the whole way. She watched as more and more Imperial ships landed, cutting off her escape, but she refused to panic. She would make calculated decisions this time, and to do that, she needed information. She didn't bother going home first, as it was already late afternoon. Instead, she went to Selda's, where she knew she was most likely to hear something useful. The cantina was nearly empty when she arrived, as the crews were still making their way back into town after their shift. Ahsoka was going to head for her friend's usual table in the back, but paused when Celda waved her into a seat at the bar. She trusted the older Togruta, knew it the same way she'd known to trust Master Plo. So she sat. Ahsoka spent most of the early evening perched on one of the bar stools. Though this meant her back was to the door, it had its advantages. When you don't look at people, they assume you can't hear them. She overheard several conversations about Imperial theories that were not intended for her ears. Celda, from his place behind the bar, kept watch under the guise of his usual work. The system functioned pretty well. They hadn't even talked about it, which was the strangest part. Ahsoka had just parked on the stool. Celda had nodded, and they'd begun. It was the sort of thing she might have done with Anakin, though espionage with Anakin Skywalker always ended with explosions, and Ahsoka had no intention of going that far. When two armored troopers and two uniformed officers walked in, she decided it was time to retreat somewhere less conspicuous. She needed only to learn as much as possible about what was going on, not get involved in any messes. The cantina door opened again, and Kaden came in, the rest of her crew behind her. It gave Ahsoka the excuse she needed to move. Celda had kept some food hot for the workers and carried it to their usual spot in the back as soon as he saw them enter. "Hey, Ashla," Kaden said quietly as she passed, and Ahsoka fell into step beside her. "How was your day?" Ahsoka asked as they all sat down around the table. "Tense," Barton said, nodding in the direction of the Imperials. "Lot of new people come to watch." "Hoban, get the croaking board," Nera ordered. It was a testament to the seriousness of the situation that Hoban did as he was told without protest. As he returned with the enormous hexagonal board, Ahsoka saw the cleverness of Nera's idea. The board was shaped in such a way that the players moved around it. They would have reasons to put their heads together and talk, and it would look like they were only lining up the next shot. Hoban spilled the little round discs on the board and sorted them by color. They began to play. "How many new friends did you make today, Kaden?" Ahsoka asked. "None," Kaden grumbled. "The troopers don't talk very much, and the officers seem to think we're beneath them." She flicked a disc, and it lodged behind one of the pegs that protruded from the board. Nera huffed. It would be difficult to hit the piece. Hoban lined up a shot. "They wouldn't talk to any of the crew leads either," Vartan said. "We went to collect payroll, and they were there. But whatever they want, it doesn't involve us at all."
"Oh," said Hoban. "It'll involve us, all right."
He flicked his disc. It bounced off one of the pegs and settled without hitting Kaden's piece first, so he cleared it off the board. Maylat lined up her shot and sunk the disc in the center of the board with little visible effort. Her points registered on the scoreboard and the celebratory song played. She fiddled with the wire until the sound cut out. "I heard them at the fueling station," Miara said. Her shot missed Kaden's piece, too, so she removed her disc. "They were asking about how fast things grow and how much we can plant at a time."
"Even Imperials have to eat," Nera said. "Do you think troopers grow on trees?"
A shudder ran down Ahsoka's spine. "Are the troopers clones?" she asked, hoping she sounded casual enough. They were being aged out of the Imperial Army, she knew, but it had only been a little more than a year, so it was possible that some of the newer ones were still active.
"I don't think so," Barton said. "They didn't take off their helmets, so I can't be sure, but I heard them talking among themselves, and they all sounded different."
Ahsoka always thought the clones sounded different, but Yoda said that was because she took the time to really listen to them. Still, if Vartan could tell them apart, that was probably a good sign for her own security. It was her turn, so she lined up a shot, aiming the same way Maylat had. It occurred to her that it would be very easy to cheat at Krokan if she used the Force, but now is not the time for experimentation. Her shot went long, skimming over the center of the board and landing on the opponent's side. Hoban gloated. Now his team had something much easier to aim for. Nera took Ahsoka's piece with no problem and ricocheted her own piece behind a peg. Now, it was up to Kaden to make the hard shot. Ahsoka had never played Krokan before she arrived on Raeda, though everyone claimed it was a very popular game. She found it oddly comforting. It
It could be played in teams or with just a pair. And the goals were twofold. Get your own pieces on the board, but stay aware of your opponent and knock any of the opponent's pieces off of it.
It was a good strategy game, and she thought Obi-Wan would have liked it. He was the more patient of her teachers.
How long have those Imperials been here? Vartan asked.
He wasn't playing, and instead just sat at their table, looking every bit the indulgent crew lead, letting his people relax after a good day's work.
They got here just a moment before you did, Ahsoka said. They're still on their first round, and they haven't spoken to anyone since they gave Celda their order. The stormtroopers haven't sat down, and the officers just watch.
Not exactly subtle, said Miara.
Kaden had missed her shot, and now Hoban was trying again.
I don't think the Empire goes for subtle, Neera said. But why here? Kaden said. I mean, there are better planets for food than Raeda. We're tiny. We don't produce that much for export.
There was a very heavy silence. Maylat's long fingers hesitated on her shot, and Ahsoka knew she was thinking of her children. Even though Ahsoka's concern for her own safety was no longer immediate, she had a bad feeling about this. I think it might be smart to start accumulating ration packs, Ahsoka said. She tried to sound knowledgeable, but not expert. She wanted them to listen to her, not follow her orders. If the Imperials start to dip into the food you grow to eat here, there isn't going to be a lot you can do to stop them.
That's a good idea, Vartan said. I'll let Celda know.
His eyes flicked past the place where the Imperial officers were sitting.
Later.
Ahsoka nodded and took her turn at the Krokan board. She missed the shot as well. Neera's piece was just too well protected behind the peg. They did another full round. Ahsoka's side trying to dislodge Neera's piece, and Hoban's team trying to dislodge Kaden's. No one had any success, except that it was nice to focus on the frustrations of the game instead of the presence of the Imperials. Neera was about to take the final shot of the game when there was a disturbance at the front of the cantina. The two officers had been joined by a third, a superior, judging by his insignia. The officers stood and saluted. The stormtroopers remained motionless. The new officer leaned forward to confer with his fellows, but spoke too quietly for Ahsoka to hear what he said. Then he marched to the doorway and fastened a notice to the wall. He looked around the cantina with some measure of scorn for the occupants before leaving. The other Imperials followed him out, without looking back. Celda walked slowly across the cantina toward the notice. Ahsoka wondered if he would tear it down, but he only read it quietly, his shoulders slumping more with every line.
"The thing about Krokan," said Vartan, taking the last disc from Neera's grasp, "is that you don't have to hit the opponent's piece head-on. You can wing it if you want, and hope for a good ricochet."
He lined up the shot and flicked the disc at Kaden's. He clipped the edge, and both pieces went flying off the board.
"Sometimes you don't get it," he said, "but you still get points."
Neera's piece was the only one remaining on the board. Her point showed up on the scoreboard a moment later, once the board realized that all the pieces had been played and the game was over.
"We still win," Kaden said. "We have Maylat's points from the beginning."
"That's the other thing about Krokan," Vartan added. "You have to remember every piece that's been played, even the ones removed from the board, because some of them might count against you in the end."
His words made Ahsoka uncomfortable. She didn't like the way she automatically began to think about tactics. She got up from the table and went to read the notice board. It was, as she suspected, a list of rules. There was a curfew in place now, which would, among other things, make it nearly impossible for anyone working the late shift to eat out when they were done. They'd have to eat at home. There were rules for forbidding group meetings of more than a certain number. The Imperials weren't closing the cantinas, but they were shortening the hours and restricting the food and alcohol available. With the lost business, it would be only a matter of time before the cantinas closed on their own. It was everything you do to keep the locals from communicating with each other and getting organized. It was everything you do to soften them up before the hammer fell. It was everything Ahsoka didn't think the farmers on Raeda would be able to counter. Scenarios ran through her mind. Ideas for insurgency and defense. Reluctantly this time, she let them. She turned away from the notice and made space for the others who wanted to read it. She pushed her way back through the strange and crowded silence to where her friends were sitting, and when she sat down, she relayed what she'd read. She didn't tell them any of her conclusions about what the new rules meant. They would figure it out. Or they wouldn't. But she would have to be careful to conceal her military experience now. There was no guessing how it might be used against her if the Imperials found out. She had to keep her secrets for as long as she could. Ahsoka looked at the Krokan board, at the single piece that remained despite the efforts of both sides. They traded shots, and even Ahsoka's mistake, which provided an easier target, hadn't been enough to change the game's outcome. Nira's piece hadn't been enough to make a difference in the end. The game had been settled on the third move, long before any of them was aware of it. Ahsoka had no idea what points the Empire had stowed away already, but she knew it was one of the tactics the Imperials used. Order 66 had been part of a very long game, and there was no reason to think that Palpatine had gotten any less foresighted since gaining full power. She was also aware that Raeda didn't have much to fight with if it came to a fight. No real ships for air support, no heavy artillery. But maybe it wouldn't go that far. Maybe they would be lucky. Maybe the Empire would take what it wanted and go. Maybe it would, she thought. But what would it leave behind? Chapter 8. Two stormtroopers stopped at Ahsoka's house the next morning. She'd locked the door, setting Miara's device for security before she went to sleep. It was a small defense, but at least it would be a warning if she needed it. Now, it prevented the stormtroopers from simply barging in. The troopers hammered on the door, and Ahsoka considered her options. Resisting would be stupid at this point. For all she knew, they just needed directions or wanted a count of the number of people who lived in town. Ahsoka could handle two troopers, even if they turned out to be clones, but it wouldn't be quiet. Better to be Ashla for as long as she could. She took a deep breath, remembered to look at the ground, and opened the door. "Can I help you, sirs?" she asked.
"Why aren't you at work?"
one of them snapped. Vartan was right. They weren't clones. Ahsoka relaxed just a little bit. "I am at work," she said. "I mean, I'm not a farmer. I fix the equipment when it's broken. See?" She gestured behind her, where the pieces of the broken vaporator were still spread out on the table. It was an easy fix, but the previous day had been a little distracting.
"We'll need your information," said the other trooper. "You may be reassigned to field work if it becomes necessary."
Ahsoka paused. She did not want to be exposed out in the fields. She didn't have a lot of freedom, but in town she could almost always find an excuse to leave and go into the hills. It was important she maintain that. She raised her eyes and looked directly at the stormtroopers' helmets where their eyes were concealed behind the lenses. "You don't need to reassign me," she said, and leaned on them with the Force. "The work I do is important for food production." It hung there for a moment, and Ahsoka wondered if she'd pushed too far. But then they looked at each other.
"We don't need to reassign her," said the first one. "The work she does is important for food production,"
the second agreed. Ahsoka smiled. "So glad we could have this little chat. Is there anything else I can help you with?" The stormtroopers looked at her, confused for a moment. She could imagine their blinking eyes and perplexed expressions, except she didn't know what their faces looked like. She refused to imagine them with Rex's face. They shook their heads, lowering their blasters and taking half a step back.
"Make sure you follow the new rules,"
the second trooper said.
"They are posted in several places around the town. Familiarize yourself with them."
"I will," she said. "Have a good day." She shut the door before they could say anything else. She liked how flummoxed they seemed by basic manners, though her intrusion into their minds was likely part of their befuddlement. She activated the lock with a quick press of her finger, and it glowed green as it sealed the door. "Remind me to ask Miara what happens if you get triggered," she said to the lock, absently running her hand across the control pad. Miara said it would be shocking to anyone who broke in, and Ahsoka hadn't asked for specifics at the time. Now, though, it was probably a good idea to be aware of what everyone around her was capable of. The Imperials were still setting up their base. The Star Destroyer was gone, or at least out of sight, but it had left behind the building blocks for a good-sized administrative building and barracks that could house several dozen stormtroopers. They hadn't had time to lock down the spaceport yet, and Ahsoka wanted to get her ship out of there before they did. The only problem was that she had no other place to put it. She looked at the vaporator parts. They could wait another day. She emptied the crate of ration packs, Caden's payment for the very first repair job, into her bag. Almost all of them fit, but after a moment's thought, Ahsoka took out 10 and put them back in the crate. She would need some food on hand after all. She added the latest package of metal pieces to the top of the bag and filled her water canteen. After a moment's thought, she added a cutting tool to the bag as well, then picked up the shredded cloths that the vaporator had been wrapped in when its owner dropped it off. She twisted them until they looked like a hunting sling and hung it from her belt, hoping that any Imperials she ran into didn't know that hunting on this moon was next to pointless. Then she went to the door and looked up and down the street. There was no sign of the stormtroopers. They couldn't harass her neighbors because most of them were at work, so they must have moved on. Ahsoka walked out onto the street and then made for the edge of town as quickly as she could. When she reached the last house, she looked around and up for any newly installed methods of Imperial surveillance, but found nothing. Then she squared her shoulders and set out toward the hills as if it were any other day. There was a time for stealth, but when stealth was impossible, the only other option was to walk like she was meant to be there. It was nerve-wracking. She had no indication that anyone was watching her, but she still felt uncomfortably exposed. At least it was less oppressive than it had been the day before, now that the Imperial ships were grounded. She didn't look back, but she wanted to, and it was all she could do to maintain an even pace as she walked. At last, she reached the first line of hills and disappeared from view of the town. Ahsoka went first to her cave, where she removed the stone slab. She used the cutter to slice away at the shelf until she'd hollowed out the hidden compartment she'd first imagined the day she found the cave. The tool was not made for stone, but it got the job done eventually. She hid the extra ration packs along with the metal pieces. As she set them down, she thought she saw a familiar pattern to them that she hadn't noticed before. There were connections, wires, between the pieces that could still conduct power. Casually, she waved her hand over them, and they moved to fall in line as she saw them in her mind's eye. "No," she said, letting her hand drop. The pieces rolled across the stone, and she scooped them up. She had other things to do. With everything secure again, Ahsoka left the cave. She paused at the entrance, wondering if there was something else she could do to conceal it from view, but she couldn't think of anything. The best she could do was make sure the inside of the cave looked entirely natural. She ducked back inside and cleaned up her footprints. Her pack significantly lighter, she continued into the hills. Now she was looking for something particular. A hill big enough that any cave inside it might be able to fit her ship. The freighter wasn't huge, but it was too large to stash in a hollow and hope no Imperials ever flew over it. She needed a cave, or perhaps a canyon where she could add her own cover. She kept a close eye on the sky as she rambled through the hills, both in case she had company and to keep track of the time. She couldn't afford to have her disappearance remarked on, and even though Caden and the others wouldn't turn her in intentionally, all it took to raise suspicion was one overheard remark at a place like Selda's. Just when she was thinking she would have to head back to town and try again the following morning, she saw a dip in the ground ahead of her. It looked almost like an optical illusion, but when she got close to the edge, she saw that it was actually a small gully. The ship would only fit in sideways, which she knew it wouldn't like, but she could make it work. "Well," she said, "that was the easy part. Now all I have to do is get the ship out here." She really missed R2-D2. The little droid was always good at this sort of thing. She decided that stealing her own ship would be much the same as walking out to the hills had been. Stealth was impossible, so she would just have to do it. Ahsoka went back into town. Again, she met no one and saw no signs that her movements had been observed. When she got near the Imperial base, she saw immediately why that was. It looked like every stormtrooper brought to occupy Raeda had engaged in patrolling the locals who had been press-ganged into construction. Ahsoka scoffed. Rex would never have been so lax with security. Even if it made the building process difficult, he would have insisted some of his men patrol the streets. It occurred to Ahsoka that the stormtroopers were not necessarily the strongest soldiers yet, and none of the officers assigned to Raeda had much experience. That was useful information. She made it all the way to the spaceport before she met anyone. A very junior-looking Imperial officer was making a list of all the ships docked there. She considered using the Force to convince him to let her take her ship. She could pretend she was under orders from one of the overseers, who appeared to be the only people the Imperials would talk to. It would be easy to play the overwhelmed hired hand and then nudge the officer a bit when he was distracted. At the same time, he might have been trained to recognize Jedi powers when they were used on him. The stormtroopers had been risky enough. Ahsoka couldn't take the same chance with an officer. She could go home and fake up some credentials, but then she wouldn't be able to move the ship until the next day. Every moment she waited was another moment one of the Imperials might remember that they were occupying a planet and they should act like it. Ahsoka couldn't afford to wait. She walked out into the yard. She would have to play her way through this by getting more creative. Or rather, Ashla would.
"You! Stop right there!" said the officer.
Ahsoka was pretty sure he was trying to make his voice deeper than it was.
"What are you doing?"
"I've come for my ship," said Ahsoka. "All these new security measures are making me nervous. I want to keep my property where only I have access to it."
"I assure you, the Imperial garrison stationed here will maintain a high level of security at this spaceport," the young officer blustered. "Your ship will be safe."
Slowly, and with considerable scorn, she looked him up and down.
"Are you high-level security?" she asked. "Because you don't inspire a lot of confidence."
His chest puffed out, and his face turned red. As she'd hoped, she hadn't made him angry. She'd embarrassed him. "I'm in charge of all the ships here," he told her. "It is my specific job and specific training to ensure that the spaceport runs smoothly and securely.
I was able to walk right in here without anyone stopping me," Ahsoka said. "I hardly call that secure."
"We're still getting set up," the officer said defensively.
"Well, that settles it," Ahsoka said.
"I'll take my ship until you're done getting set up, and then I'll bring it back when I know everything is safe."
"I really don't think," began the officer, but Ahsoka had already blown past him.
She was in the pilot's seat and preparing to take off before he mustered any kind of protest. And by then, the engines were too loud for her to hear him. She took off and flew in the opposite direction of the hills. It wouldn't take much time to fly around the moon the long way, and it would help cover her tracks before she concealed the ship in the ravine.
As she flew, it occurred to her that she could just keep flying. She could leave Raeda, run from the Empire again, and try to set up somewhere it hadn't reached yet. She could find a cave in some isolated mountain range, or an oasis in the middle of a desert. She could go far away and abandon everyone again. Not again. Not again. She looked down at the fields of Raeda, spread out below her, and knew it was a dream anyway. There was nowhere she could go where the Empire wouldn't find her eventually. No matter how far she went, it would be behind her, nipping at her heels. She might as well face them here, where she was relatively anonymous and moderately prepared. She set the ship down in the gully, wedging it in backwards so that the nose of the vessel pointed straight at the sky. As she suspected, the landing struts were very unhappy with her, but the rocky sides of the ravine supported most of the ship's weight. She stayed on the bridge, lying back against the chair and looking up, her mind filled with too many thoughts. She didn't get out of the pilot's seat for a long time.
Chapter 9. Ahsoka was late getting back to town, even running the whole way, but her ship was hidden and she was relatively sure no one had detected her as she was hiding it. She stayed in her house only long enough to throw the mostly empty bag on the bed and kick the crate with the ration packs in it under the table before heading to Selda's. She hoped Kaden and the others hadn't been too vocal in wondering where she was. There were even fewer people in the cantina that night, as most of them had headed home well in advance of the curfew. Ahsoka had seen this sort of thing before when she was on Separatist-occupied worlds during the Clone Wars.
For the first few days, the locals would observe the rules very closely and see what the reaction to breaking them was. Then they would begin to push back. If the Imperials reacted violently, the pushback could be extreme. With the thinner crowd, she spotted Caden and the others immediately. Maylat was gone already, presumably home to her children, but the others were crammed around the Krokan board. They were playing a variation Ahsoka hadn't seen before. Instead of all the pieces being shot onto the board one by one, about half of them were carefully placed. In fact, it looked a lot like the Imperial... Ahsoka sat down and brushed her hand across the board, scattering the pieces.
"Hey!" Hoban said. "We were working on that!"
"Could you possibly yell more loudly?" Ahsoka gritted out between clenched teeth. "I don't think they heard you on Alderaan."
Hoban had the sense to look abashed. "Ahsoka is right," Vartan said. "We should be more careful discussing things out in the open."
"Where's Maylat?" Ahsoka asked.
"Packing," Nera said. "Her husband's family found them work on Sullust. The Empire is there too, of course, but it's more established. We have no idea what's going to happen here, and they decided it wasn't safe with the kids and all."
"It's a good idea if you can manage it," Ahsoka said. "But there's going to be lots who can't."
"You have a ship," Caden said. "You can leave whenever you want."
"My ship has been stolen," Ahsoka said and winked. "Who knows where I might find it?"
"I'm glad you're staying," Caden said. "I don't know why, but I get the sense you're useful in situations like this."
Ahsoka smiled at her and turned to look at Caden's sister.
"Miara, I have a question about your locks," she said. "You told me that if anyone broke in, they'd get a shock. What did you mean by that?"
"I set a small electric charge inside the lock mechanism," Miara said. "If it's not disarmed correctly, it delivers a shock that's strong enough to make a person think twice before stealing your gear. Also, there's a die pack rigged to explode when the charge is delivered, so whoever tries it will stand out in a crowd. Why do you ask?"
Nera was looking at Miara speculatively. Caden appeared slightly ill.
"Could you do it with something other than die?" Vartan asked. "And could it be a bigger charge?"
"Of course," said Miara. "Only then someone might really get hurt instead of..."
"Oh. Let's hold off on that for now," Ahsoka said. "We have other things to worry about."
"Why wait?" Hoban said. "If we can set explosives, why don't we just get rid of the Imperials now?"
"Hoban, keep your voice down."
This time it was Nera who admonished him.
"All that would do is bring more Imperials, and they'd crack down harder," Ahsoka told him. "We can't dislodge them entirely. What we need to do is figure out how to survive while they're here."
"We'd better work quickly," Caden said.
There was a commotion at the door, and several uniformed Imperials came in. They glared their way to the bar, where they waited pointedly for the stools to empty. Then they took them over, effectively cutting off Selda from his clientele. The scarred Togruta continued to wipe glasses and arrange them on shelves as if nothing were out of the ordinary. Ahsoka marveled at his apparent nerves of steel.
"Why do you say that?" Ahsoka asked Caden. "I heard the overseers talking today," she said. "They're going to add 2 hours to every shift to get as much work out of us as they can."
"There won't be anything to harvest,"
Hoban said, finally keeping his voice down.
"We're almost done, and then we have to wait until the new crops grow."
"The Imperials have something to speed that along," Caden said. "They'll use it, and we'll be harvesting again before we know it."
"I've seen them bringing in their own seed," Miara said. "Whatever they're planting, it won't be something we get to keep or sell."
"They'll buy off the overseers," Ahsoka said. "They'll give them enough money to go off-world, and then work the rest of us to the bone. I've seen things like this before."
"Where did you come from?" Nera asked.
"It's not important," Ahsoka said. "You just have to trust me."
"We have to blow things up," said Hoban, "before they get too organized."
"No," said Ahsoka. "I know it's going to be hard, but we have to wait."
Why?
Hoban demanded. But before Ahsoka could answer him, there was another disturbance at the front of the bar. Tobola was drunk, even though his shift had ended at the same time as Cadence. Ahsoka hadn't seen him in weeks, as the laborer made his rounds of the various cantinas and watering holes Ra'eda had to offer. Now, when there were Imperial officers at the bar, he was present, and he was at his worst. Tobola was cunning enough when he was sober, but this inebriated, he was a mess. He'd been glaring at the Imperials ever since they cut him off from the bar. When they blocked his attempt to order another round, he lost what little control he had remaining and tried to muscle his way past them. His blows were clumsy, but he was strong, and enough of his hits landed that the Imperials responded in force. One of them pushed Tobola back, hard, and Ahsoka knew it was only the opening salvo. The Empire didn't really do warning shots.
You Imperials!
Tobola's words were slurred as he stumbled back. Somehow, he managed to keep his feet.
Coming to my moon and messing with me! You have no idea what you're in for!
An officer casually punched Tobola in the gut. It was a hard blow, hard enough that Tobola went to his knees and vomited everything he had to drink, but not hard enough to keep him down. Tobola roared insensibly and charged the officer. Ahsoka lunged quickly and blocked Hoban, who would have gone to help, until Neera could pull him back into his chair. Kaden and Miara watched, horrified as the officer deflected Tobola's attack again. Then, calmly, the officer called out to the stormtroopers who'd been waiting in the street while their superiors drank. They came inside and put their hands on Tobola's shoulders, keeping him down for good.
The Empire will not tolerate disobedience, said the officer, more to the others in the cantina than to Tobola himself.
Tobola, in a moment of sobriety, seemed to realize what he'd done. His eyes filled with panic as he cast them around the room, looking for someone to help him. No one moved.
No, he said. I'm sorry, please.
But it was no use. The officer gestured to the stormtrooper who stood closest to the door, and the trooper raised his blaster.
Don't look, Ahsoka whispered into Kaden's ear, and Kaden pulled her sister's face down on the table, blocking both their views.
But it didn't block the sound of a blaster in close quarters or the smell of charred flesh. At least it was fast. Tobola didn't scream. The Imperials stepped over the smoking body and exited the cantina. There was no noise for several moments after they left, except the sounds Miara made as she vomited beside the table.
That's why we have to be careful, Ahsoka said, looking directly at Hoban when she spoke.
His eyes were wide, and she knew he'd listen to her now.
Come on, Hoban, said Vartan.
His voice was gray, but determined.
We'll have to bury him tonight.
They picked up the body and carried it out. Neera trailed after them. She looked like she was going to be sick. Ahsoka suspected she'd rather be anywhere else, but was reluctant to let her brother out of her sight. Ahsoka didn't blame her. Once they were gone, she looked back at Kaden and Miara.
Are you all right? She asked.
There was a short pause, then Miara leaned sharply forward, vomiting again into the empty bowl. Kaden rubbed her sister's shoulders, even though her face was as wan as Ahsoka had ever seen it. Selda came over with water for them and some bread so that Miara could get the taste out of her mouth.
How can you be so calm? Miara demanded, her voice high.
Ahsoka suspected that the bread was a bit stale and that focusing on chewing it was keeping the girl from full-on hysterics.
Where are you from?
Don't bug her, Kaden said. Her voice was shaky. Finish that and we'll go home.
Kaden wrestled the croquen board back onto the table. While Miara chewed obediently, Kaden started firing pieces slowly, hitting the center target over and over again, even though that wasn't how the game went. Ahsoka figured it gave her something to focus on.
You have to take a piece if it's there, Ahsoka mused, looking at the board.
What? Kaden said.
In croquen, Ahsoka clarified. You don't just get to take the shots you want. You have to shoot at your opponent's pieces.
So let's do that.
Shoot with what?
Miara asked, her mouth full.
We don't have a lot of blasters.
No, Ahsoka said. Not like that. The Imperials want a fast crop. So, what you do is slow it down.
How? Caden said.
Both sisters look better now. Ahsoka had successfully distracted them.
I have no idea, Ahsoka said. I'm not a farmer. But Vartan will know, or one of the other crew leads. You still talk to each other in the fields, right?
And it's more difficult for the Imperials to overhear you there. You can organize yourselves that way. The crew leads will meet to discuss information and then pass it off to their crews.
That's very smart, Caden said. And it doesn't even break the rules. We're allowed to meet with our crews.
I know. That's what makes it such a good plan, Ahsoka said with a wink.
What are you going to do? Miara asked. She swallowed the last mouthful of bread. There's a space in our crew if you want it, because Maylat's gone.
Ahsoka considered it. She'd be a terrible farmer, and that would surely slow them down plenty. But then she had a better idea.
No, she said. I'm going to stay a mechanic for now, but I'm going to stop being such a good one.
If equipment can't be fixed, that will only slow you down more.
We have to get moving, Caden said. It's almost curfew, and we have a bit of a walk.
It wasn't quite that late yet, but Ahsoka hardly needed to press the issue.
Be safe, Ahsoka told them. I'll see you tomorrow. Be careful when you tell Vartan my suggestion, but let him run with it if he agrees.
The sisters nodded and headed for the door. Miara took the long way around the cantina floor to avoid stepping on the place where Tabola had fallen, and Ahsoka watched as Caden led her. Then Ahsoka made her way to the bar. She should be going too, but she wanted to have a word with Selda before she did. She sat on one of the stools before realizing she didn't even know what she wanted to talk to him about.
That was quick thinking, making sure the girls didn't see, Selda said. I have a feeling you've seen too much yourself.
No argument there, Ahsoka told him wearily.
Be careful, little one, he said.
Ahsoka started to protest, but he raised his real hand and she stopped.
Even if you're not so little, you're littler than me.
She gave him a smile. It felt absurdly nice to be taken care of. Maybe that was what she needed, even if she didn't need it very often. Before, when she'd faced death, she'd had Anakin to talk it over with afterward. She'd handled it on her own since then, of course, but that didn't mean she liked it. Selda poured all the leftovers into a container and passed it to her. The seal wasn't as good as the one on the ration packs, but the food would still keep for several days. Ahsoka walked home quickly, calculating how much food she could lay her hands on and how long it would last, depending on whom she shared it with. She was still doing variations of the equation when she fell asleep.
Chapter 10. 1 week became two, and the crops grew slowly. The new Imperial overseers extended the shifts again, so the farmers were in the fields for nearly the entirety of Ra'eda's daylight. They did not increase the food rations or the number of breaks, though they did allow for more water intake. Imperial efficiency at its finest. Ahsoka spent her days smuggling food, medical supplies, and water recyclers out to the caves. She had found a network set in the hills between her original base and where she'd hidden her ship. Selda was her chief supplier in town, though she knew other vendors must have been pitching in too. She didn't need to know all the details. She just had to do her part. It had taken Vartan and the other experienced hands a while to identify what they were growing. They'd stalled the planting for as long as they possibly could. The plows all broke, and the mechanic was nowhere to be found. But then the Imperials had withheld food altogether, and the farmers had gone back to work. The seeds were planted and watered, and now shoots could be seen sticking up from the soil. It was then that Vartan figured out what they were growing.
"It's not even real food," he said, his voice a disgusted whisper as they huddled around the croaking board at Selda's. "It's for their wretched nutritional supplements. You know those things they make the military eat because they're tasteless and bland, but have all the things you need to live in them."
I don't see why you find that so offensive, Nira said. Why do you care what Imperials eat?
Because this particular plant leaches everything from the soil it grows in, Vartan said.
By the time we harvest, the fields will all be useless dirt. Nothing will grow for seasons. And it's not like they're going to pay us anything we can use to buy fertilizer with. The whole moon will be ruined.
Kaden and Miara exchanged worried glances. Raeda was the only home they'd ever known, and they had no one else in the galaxy to look out for them. They had nowhere else to go.
Are there other fields? Ahsoka asked, her voice as low and calm as she could make it.
No, Vartan said. The whole of Raeda is nearly useless to begin with. That's why there was never a hut presence or anything like that. We just had the overseers, and they were mostly reasonable. But I think the Empire scared them, and they abandoned us.
I can understand that, Nira said. Hoban glared at her.
I'm not saying I like it, but I understand it. Most of them have families like Maylat.
Do you hate her for leaving?
Hoban said nothing for a moment, and Ahsoka knew he was trying to stay angry, because the only other option he saw was hopelessness.
Can we blow things up yet?
He asked at last.
Did you have something particular in mind? Ahsoka asked.
Do you? Hoban demanded.
Ahsoka sighed, and decided it was time to lay all her cards on the table. Or at least, most of her cards. If she kept holding out, it was only a matter of time before Hoban did something stupid, and that might put Kaden and Miara in harm's way.
There are caves out in the hills, she said. She took a croken disc off the top of the pile and flicked it toward the center of the board. It landed neatly behind one of the pegs, blocking it from an opponent's shot.
Everyone knows that, Hoban said. There are too many to map effectively, and nothing grows out there, so no one goes there.
I go there, Ahsoka said, and I take all kinds of interesting things with me.
You've been setting up camps, Kaden said, without telling anyone?
Zelda knows, Nira said.
Ahsoka raised an eyebrow, and Nira shrugged.
Zelda knows everything, and he's the one who'd be supplying your food, I imagine.
Yes, Ahsoka said,
but it's not just food. There are several water recyclers and whatever medical supplies I could scrounge. There's also a lot of junked up equipment. You know, sharp blades and circuits. You have to be careful not to overload, because they might blow up on you.
But you still want us to wait, Hoban said, while our home dies underneath us.
I want you to think, Ahsoka said.
Lay off, Hoban. She's right, Nira said. She turned to the board and tried firing a croken disc. It missed, bouncing off the peg that concealed Ahsoka's piece.
What do you want us to do? Vartan asked. We can't slow down in the fields much more than we already are. The Imperials will notice and start withholding food again.
Can you spare Miara and Kaden for a few days? Ahsoka asked. I'd like to take them with me. Miara can start building those bigger locks you talked about. And Kaden and I can organize the rest of our potential gear. I can fix a machine well enough, but Kaden's more familiar with the local geography. She can help me decide where to put it.
Vartan looked at the girls and nodded.
We'll tell the Imperials you're sick if they ask, he said. And we'll mysteriously forget where you live so they can't check on you themselves. It's not much of a cover story, but it's the best we can do.
It'll be fine, Ahsoka said. We only need a few days to get organized, and then we'll be able to check in with you again. In the meantime, keep your heads down. We're all in enough danger as it is.
Miara's gaze turned to the spot on the floor where Tabola had been gunned down, but Hoban only glared at Ahsoka. If he had any protest to make, he didn't voice them. Instead, Zelda arrived at the table with what passed for a hot dinner under the new Imperial restrictions, and soon, everyone was too busy eating to talk.
Jeddith Pilar sat in his new temporary office and scrolled through the numbers. It was therapeutic, seeing his calculations add up the way he wanted them to, over and over and over again. He was encouraged by the scarcity of errors and the smallness of the margins. He had everything figured out perfectly. Here, in this bare little room, on this soon-to-be bare world, he had calculated life and death and gotten paid for it. Not bad work, all things considered, though the food was terrible. Raeda was a tedious little place, but it would serve its purpose. The Empire would get what it wanted and then be on its way. The farmers would have their freedom again, for all the good it would do them. They really should have thought of the risks before they became farmers. Jeddith turned a blind eye to his part in their incipient suffering, a privilege that came with never really having suffered. He looked out the window at the ordered rows in the fields, and then the grasslands beyond them, where nothing useful could grow. Beyond that were the low-lying hills that made up the rest of the moon's surface. Rocky, useless, and probably cold once the sun went down. But something about them niggled at Jeddith's sense of order. He hadn't included the hills in his calculations, because the planetary scans he'd studied had assured him they were barren. At the same time, their mere existence should merit their inclusion in his formula. He hated unbalanced equations. In the morning, he would commandeer a ship and take a closer look. He couldn't go now, as much as he suddenly wished to, because it was too late in the day. It was nearly curfew. With the sun setting and the last poor ragged souls stumbling home after a hard day of near slavery in service of the Empire. If only they knew what awaited them. Jeddith looked with great distaste at his dinner, a tube of pure nutrition that left his insides feeling somehow cheated, and counted the days until he was away from this moon. It couldn't come soon enough. He pulled up his calculations again and let the running tally of labor, production, yield, and destruction wash over him. Not bad work, the jobs he did. And he was going to make sure he kept doing well enough that the Empire would keep paying him to do it. He had no intention of ending up like the benighted souls who called Raeda home, destitute and marooned on a lifeless rock. They talked in the fields. The Imperials couldn't hear what they plotted there, and neither could the girl who called herself Ashla.
"I don't think it's a good idea," Caden said. "Ashla wants us to wait."
"Ashla isn't from here," Hoban said. "She got to Raeda only just before the Imperials did, and she wouldn't even tell you her name at first. We don't know anything about her. For all we know, she's with them."
"That's ridiculous," Caden said, but even Miara looked hesitant. Caden bristled. She didn't like it when other people speculated about her feelings, especially when they were right. Neera held up a hand.
"Look, Caden, I know you like her, but think about it," Neera said. "Ashla said it herself. She doesn't understand farming. She doesn't really understand what we lose every day this blasted plant is in the ground. She has a ship. She can go wherever she wants."
"But she hasn't," Caden said.
"Anyone with any sense has left," Neera said. "Anyone who can. And yet she stays. Why do you think that is?"
"Maybe she likes us," Caden said.
"Oh, Caden," Neera said.
It was almost kind, but edged too far into pity to be pleasant to hear.
"Don't treat me like a child, Neera," Caden said, and hated how petulant she sounded. "And don't you dare involve my sister in anything dangerous."
"I'll do what I want," Miara said.
Caden looked sharply at her. They were almost the same height now,
When had that happened?
All we're saying is that when Miara builds things for Ashla's stores, she also builds things for us, Hoban said. It makes sense to have our supplies split up. That way, if something happens to Ashla, we're not strung out on our own.
Caden hesitated. She wanted to trust Ashla, but what Hoban was saying made sense. Ashla had said it a lot herself, or at least implied it. She'd worked with Zelda without telling any of them, and she'd stolen her own ship. It couldn't do much harm for Caden to help her own crew make their own plans.
Okay, she said. I'm in. Tomorrow, Miara and I will go with Ashla and learn as much as we can, and we'll share it with you.
Good, Hoban said.
He looked up and saw that Vartan was heading back toward them, so he turned away from the girls and focused on his job.
Hoban was watering today. The work didn't take a lot of his concentration, but required strong shoulder muscles, which he had in plenty. Miara was too little to be more than a runner, so she'd been carrying messages. Hoban's shoulders ached under the weight. He didn't mind hard work, but this was extreme, and it was only a matter of time before he got too weak to work on the rations he was given. And if he was feeling it, the others were too. The girls would crumple first, he knew. They were strong, but they weren't indestructible. Miara was already attracting too much attention from the Imperials as they questioned her abilities in the field. If they sent her off, she'd lose what small rations she was still getting. Hoban was helping them, even if Ashla couldn't see it. She just didn't understand farming like he did, but she would. And then she'd realize that they were all in this together.